Welcome to Liberty.me Studio. Be part of the global liberty community at Liberty.me. Liberty lives here.
This Hangout on Air is live. All right. Welcome, everyone, to Politics After Dark. Thank you all for joining me, and thank you, Austin Peterson, for being my very special guest, presidential candidate. So, you know, we are very important tonight.
Thanks for having me, Rachel.
Thank you for coming back. This is, what, your third time?
I think this is my second time, yeah. Right when I told you I was thinking about running.
Yeah, and I think you came on my podcast like a year ago, forever ago. Anyway, is that true? I don't know.
Well, you have a long and storied career, Rachel.
Yes. Who can keep track? But anyway, over in the chat, hi. I just posted in the chat that I was having a personal crisis about my dog. The good news is a neighbor just called me a few minutes ago. They found the dog. He's fine. She's got him on her porch, and my husband is going to get him. So I feel better.
That's real problems, man. The president can't solve those kinds of problems. If I was Hillary Clinton, I would say, I will start a study commission to rescue women from women that lost their dogs.
Yeah, they can never just say, I can't help you with that. Right. You just got to have to deal with that yourself. I can't help you. But, so that is going to be resolved shortly with a happy ending. That's good. And we're going to fix the gate so it doesn't do this again. Okay, here's the story. The reason the gate doesn't close very well is because our basement flooded, and then the Roto-Rooter people that came to fix it, they had a really huge truck, and they bumped the gate, and it doesn't quite close right anymore. So there, that's that. Yeah. Yes, Charles Kennedy remembers. He's a genius. Austin was on the Spreecast version of Rachel's podcast about a year ago. Yes, yes. He's my archivist. Charles Kennedy over in chat. Thank you for coming. And Anthem Vault is here in the form of Megan.
Hi, Megan.
Megan goes way, way back with us. She's been an activist and in liberty circles as long as I think I have. Or you. So, yeah. Megan's old school. It's good to have you around. Let's get down to serious business, serious questions. Austin, what are you drinking?
It was a crazy night. We had a big happy hour here tonight. We had a fundraiser.
You had a happy hour live on Facebook, and it was awesome. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I was listening to it while I was making dinner. So
the cool thing is about this new technology on Facebook is that, you know, you can live stream, do what we're doing right now, and it blasts it to your audience. So people come in and they're sending in phone calls. We were taking live calls from our audience, and it's real connections. You know, grassroots means you have to touch people, not just speak at them, but speak with them. And so, you know, I'm trying to take every opportunity I can to like speak with people like this, you know, like you and I, we're trying to talk about the ideas that we really care about.
That's why I like you, Austin. I like people who think like me. And I think the future of media is not speaking at people, not just a head in a box broadcasting at you. I think the future of media is going to be interactive like this. Like Huffington Post Live, HuffPo Live, have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
I mean that's good stuff. And the technology is not excellent yet, but it's getting there. And pretty, like, in 5 years, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be like, you know, before and after YouTube. It's going to be like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, there's all kinds of competing technologies right now that are platforms. They're really just the platforms, right? So it's a matter of, do people want to hear what you have to say? I mean, it's a real meritocracy, Rachel. Think about it. The cream rises to the top in this kind of of an atmosphere. So, like, you know, when it turns out, like, what is it? What are you going to be successful, right? Can you entertain? Can you educate? Can you give people something that they want? And that really is going to be, you know, the deciding factor. After that really is going to be also the technical issues, which sometimes have to do less with your actual message and more with how you deliver it. and what platforms you choose to use to deliver it. Like right now, you've created Liberty Me, and Liberty Me is what we're talking through right now. And it's like, this is a platform to talk about these issues. But you know, when you're talking about free speech and you're talking about the ability to communicate, mass media and stuff like that, you have to understand not only the medium that you're using, right, but you have to understand, like, what is the sort of, like, social atmosphere or the zeitgeist that gives the real platform, which is, do I listen to you now, or are you an idiot and I close my ears? Sometimes,
yeah.
And sometimes people are just, you know, they're just idiots and maybe they don't know what's a good method.
Okay, Austin.
Donald Trump.
That you are behaving like a true presidential candidate. And I mean that in a nasty way, because you pivoted. You did not answer my question. The question, sir, was, what are you drinking?
Actually, I'm a Kansas City boy, born and raised. So I was drinking some Kansas City Boulevard unfiltered wheat. The Boulevard Ale is the local. The Boulevard Wheat is the local brewery out here in Kansas City. It's a good Kansas City company, a local company.
Good.
I love a good Boulevard. And I've been drinking Boulevard, man, since I was legal age to drink, which I, of course, would never break such a law.
Are you legal age to drink? We know that you're not.
I'm running for president right now. Rachel, you want to laugh? I'm doing my job. You know what I mean? This is funny. I talk to everybody. I somehow tell people, everybody that I talk to, you know, I tell them that I'm running for president, whether I meet them in a bar or whether I'm on the street or something like that. I somehow manage, because I like to trick people, play with people, right? It's fun. It's not trick people, but it's like if you meet an old lady, you know, in the checkout aisle, right, or you meet the grocery, you know, how can you fit it in? I kind of tease it out. So like, how can I explain to people? Because when people realize that I'm serious, you know, they're usually like, because usually somebody who would say something like that is like, oh, you're a crazy person. They instantly want to know, this guy's nuts. I never heard of this guy, so he must be nuts, right?
You're totally making me want to run for president now, just so I can play that game. That sounds fun.
Why not? Jim Webb, you know, I mean, like, there are a lot of candidates in this race, and that's what makes it so interesting, because never before have there been so many interesting options. And some people say they've made up their minds. You know, I don't believe that. Polls are skewed. It doesn't matter what the polls say today, because they'll say something else tomorrow. So, I mean, Christopher Hitchens had a great quote about polls, a couple of great polls. One was polls aren't really commissioned to tell you what people think as much as they're to tell people how to think.
Interesting.
Here's the thing, the mainstream media, think about it. Normal people don't poll. They don't even have polls. Who needs polls? Rich people who have special interests have polls. They spend money, you know. Why would a normal person who's like a welder, you know, commission a poll? You know,
that's true.
Some people do polls for, like, you know, certain types of marketing and stuff like that. And so, you know, George Soros or the Koch brothers, they, you know, look at the marketplace and sort of sell their ideas. Go ahead and come on through. Can't see you. Sorry, we're still the
this is a very casual show. No problem. Bring them on air. I don't care.
Where were we?
Polls. I think you were making the point that everyone who does polls is, like, has a bias, has an interest. I disagree because there are certain pollsters that are in the business of being right. And if they're wrong after the fact too many times, then they lose credibility.
There is
a segment of pollsters that are like that. They are totally nonpartisan and you should believe them. But I think the trick is you've got to learn how to tell the difference.
Yeah.
You've got to understand who is commissioning the poll.
You're asking a lot, Rachel. This is why libertarians who are like egalitarians really get to me, because I'm like, you're the elite. You know, you're the one.
Whoa.
Wow.
What's she drinking?
We've had a lot tonight. We're celebrating because, like, we're having fun. And Rachel, you know, like, if anybody doesn't know, like, you know, here's my voice right here in my mouth, looking across from me. We are the revolution. You know, like, the Ron Paul revolution, we started 2007, 2008. I will never forget. Can I tell the story? Can I divert? Sorry, I don't want to be a politician here, but.
Okay.
Rachel and I, the first time that Rachel and I really met, I saw her at CPAC. the first time. We didn't speak. She was with Ron Paul. I was starstruck. Ron was my hero. And then I saw her again when I was bringing petitions. I was working at the Libertarian Party, and I was bringing petitions around to help support Ron Paul's audit of the Fed bill. And this would have been 2008-ish, you know. And I saw Rachel, and Rachel was the chief comms director for Ron Paul, and so I thought she was pretty much the coolest person ever.
I totally am. You're right about that.
But I was going to play it cool, and, you know, I'd met Ron before, but I wanted, you know, I wanted my interns to meet him and, you know, had them to be excited, and I wanted to support this legislative effort. And I remember Rachel spoke to me for the first time, and she stopped me afterwards, after we all spoke to Ron, and the interns had freaked out. We'd had the best day of our lives, basically. And we delivered our petitions and did our civic activism, democracy, small d. Rachel came and grabbed my arm, and she said, "I hadn't got your business card." And I gave her my business card, and ever since then, Rachel and I have been friends. And now she's my communications director for my presidential campaign, my own presidential campaign. And because she knows that I'm serious and we're trying to accomplish things. I hope the people who are listening to this show right now know that, like, you know, sincere warriors, sincere liberty warriors and champions.
I'll tell you my favorite Austin Peterson memory. Ooh. Is when you came out to play poker with us at the Carlisle Club.
Yes, the Carlisle
Club. Yeah.
That was actually one of my favorite nights ever.
Yeah, we became regulars. I actually helped them out with some marketing and finagled us some, you know, benefits so that we could go see. Oh yeah, that's totally our jam. So yeah, we love the Carlisle Club. We love Doc Scantlin and the Imperial Palms Orchestra. And I so wish we could spend another New Year's with them. But if you're in the D.C. area and you have the opportunity, highly recommend it. They're like Rainbow Room. Yeah, they used to play the Rainbow Room for New Year's Eve. That's how awesome they are. And I know you know what that means. You know,
I'm more like Studio 54.
Yeah, the Rainbow Room. New Year's Eve. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I'm so excited about what we're doing together. I don't mean to divert the show again, but, I mean, I'm so excited about what's happening, the possibilities.
Yeah.
But have options, you know what I mean? Like, I love Rand. Can we talk about Rand? Can we, please?
We should totally talk about Rand because I think a lot of people are – well, you start. You start. Oh, but first, I have to answer the question. We always start the show with, what are you drinking? And after I say what I'm drinking, because what I'm drinking is important, I have a Best Mom Ever wine glass because that's how I roll. And I am drinking a Carlo Rossi Burgundy because that's what Jeffrey Tucker recommended, and I've become addicted to it now. So Carlo Rossi Burgundy and a Best Mom Ever wine glass that I bought for myself. Okay. Rand, let's talk about Rand.
Oh, honey, I'm so worried for him. I just, like, you know, my own party gives me hell because I say nice things about him. But, I mean, like, you know, Mike Lee. I love Mike Lee, but he's got a lot of bad stuff about him, you know. Ted Cruz has got a lot of bad stuff.
Mike Lee is on my shit list because he co-sponsored the gambling. Yeah.
You know why, too. They're all sellouts.
Because he's in Sheldon Adelson's pocket.
I know, but Rand is like the least sellest outesty.
What?
He's like the least sellest outesty. Well,
that's my new favorite word. Sellest outesty.
Marco Rubio called him out on the debate the other night about his immigration bill as affecting people who have nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. And here's the thing. If you're going to lose, fight for the purity, fight for the end. Yeah. I'm not a purist, but when I know I might lose, if you follow Sun Tzu's teachings and you go crazy bastard strategy, you know, like you're willing to nuclear destroy, you know, mutually assured destruction, then, you know, all of a sudden you're in Trump territory in terms of polls. But, I mean, that's just tactics. You know, I think Rand does believe – I honestly think Rand does believe a lot of – probably most of everything that his father believes in many ways. Rand was always there with Murray. you know, and our guys, you know, I'm more of a Robert Noza guy, but we're a big tent movement. And, you know, Ron and Rand play their part in this. They're not the end all be all. Now let's talk about this, the cult of Paul. Let's talk about the cult of Paul, Rachel, because you're a Paulista. You're a Paulistinian. You know, for the man.
I'm Pollyanna.
I'm independent. I've never taken a dime of money from Rand or Ron, and I've probably put in, you know, $150,000 at least worth of work.
I've taken a lot of money from them, but it's all been taxpayer money. So
right,
that, should, that should endear me to all the libertarians.
Right, so now you're giving it back to me.
Yeah. Let me
just say, the cult of Paul, and we need to discuss this because, like, people are like, yeah. Oh, why is all this stuff so uncomfortable? It's the uncomfortable stuff that gets the dialogue going so we can move forward our principles, not the stuff that we all agree on, but the stuff we disagree on that makes this important, because I think we've gotten so much into a cult of personality that, like, we can't get out of this mindset that maybe a libertarian candidate isn't like a sweet old man, you know, like gentle, yeah. Pacifistic sort of an old man. This is a strain of libertarianess, this paleo-libertarianism, and what Rothbard and Lou Rockwell and many of these men created in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But
yeah.
It's exclusionary to the young secular humanist, the skeptical libertarian, the Penn Jillette libertarian, Penn and Teller libertarian, like myself, for example, the scientific secular humanist libertarian that agrees with Ron Paul on almost everything, but perhaps religion and some other things like immigration. But the Kochs are big free market libertarians.
Yeah.
So the cult of personality, I think, limits us. And I want to, you know, do you agree? Do you think there is a cult of personality that limits?
Yeah, I absolutely do agree. And actually, what I think is that Ron Paul never wanted a cult of personality. This is, here, it's Jesus, Mike.
He never wanted it. No, he didn't like it. And I could see him getting uncomfortable with the popularity in certain
ways. I mean, if it's the most awkward thing in the world. It was the most awkward thing in the world for me to watch these young kids come up and give him a hug. I understand, like, where it came from, but, like, that just wasn't his personality to want to be all touchy-feely. I think he only gave me one hug in my life, and that was a hug goodbye my last day out of the office. And I'm going to cry. No, I'm not going to cry. But he's just not a touchy-feely kind of guy. Yeah. And he's not into that. That's why this article this weird article that came out this week, I don't know if you saw it, that there was some kind of friction and jealousy between Rand and Ron. It
you're trying to divide us. I see them out there.
It totally did not ring true to me because there was
Was that the buzz? Ron, was that the Blaze guy from BuzzFeed?
Yeah. And I heard Bill Beck talking about this. So it's out there. People are talking about this rumor and, like, oh, it has inside information legs to it. And it's like, it doesn't ring true to me because there is no ego to Ron Paul. There really isn't. And I don't think people really understand that. But, like, there's no ego. It's not even possible that has happened.
None of it made any sense to me either. I've stepped down from the Libertarian Republic as editor. To try and, like, have a magazine there that's objective, at least as objective as it can be with the fact that I own it. Because I try, you know, I believe in integrity. My writers love Rand. They love Rand and they love Ron. And of course they love me as for that. But, like, I've told them, I said, you don't cover me or my campaign until I'm the news. You know, and until it's important part of our libertarian story.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you know, they're writing about Rand. And, like, you know, there's an internal struggle going on in between them, between, like, you know, the skepticism that the chances that he might win and, like, what they are. But there's not a doubt that our movement has cohesiveness and that there are powers working against us to divide us. And, like, you know, I try and be a good shepherd for them in order to sort of guide them.
We really do need to be a big tent. That's important because divided we accomplish nothing.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are many fronts to the war, and everybody just pick a front and fight on that front, and don't fight about whose front is better. Just keep fighting. Just do what you do, and support each other. And, you know, if we could just do that, and it sounds so simple, but every organization, the best class I ever took in college was organizational behavior. And it's all about psychology and groups and how people fight in fighting and power struggles. And so fascinating. But yeah, every organization has these kinds of struggles. And if we could just figure out, you know, to focus on the common enemy rather than, you know, who in the liberty movement is a fascist, because we're not fascists, we're libertarians.
But look at what happened with Christopher Cantwell. You see recently, like, this is very, very internal politics, but it's indicative.
I know, but all you have to do is not give them lip service. The people that you don't like, just ignore them. You know, just
our hero made a mistake. Ron got in bed with the paleo strategy, and you know that was wrong.
What are you referring to?
I'm talking about
decades ago.
The people who now support Donald Trump, who have abandoned, the reason why the Liberty Movement has taken a big back seat recently is because the white nationalists and the hardcore supremacists that are not individual liberty types like ourselves have abandoned the Liberty Movement, and we have receded in our numbers because the people who claim to support individual liberty really support that ethno-supremacism that is the antithesis of individual rights, and one that Ayn Rand directly called out. You know what I'm talking about, the newsletters. And this was the
antithesis. The newsletters, you're bringing up the newsletters again?
Listen, this is an important part of our ethos. You have to understand.
Okay. Okay.
The paleo conservatives and the libertarians have had alliances in the past, and they have proven to be fickle friends. Because now look where they look. Now look where what hath Rothbard wrought on our movement.
Rothbard hath wrought a lot.
Intellectually, banking certain things. He was wrong about the gold standard because he wanted fixed reserves and demand. You know, he basically was fiat gold standard. We'll discuss this later.
It was a mistake.
We are classical liberals, okay?
Yeah.
That means that individual rights, individual liberty are indiscriminate of your skin color, or of your socioeconomic background. It is true egalitarianism because all humans, all men are created equal. and unfortunately we have abandoned Lincoln. And that is a shame because there is a libertarian Lincoln out there. Lou Lehrman, who wrote the book, Lincoln at Peoria, was on Ron Paul's Gold Commission in the 80s, served with Reagan, and voted with Ron Paul. But because we have been so encapsulated, we have been so, internally, we have been so encapsulated within that paleo strategy that now we are all von Mises, which is not von Mises, perhaps, but we are all, you know, that Auburn, and not enough of the nodes of our collective consciousness. And I've used the word collective for a reason. Because if you're talking about Big Ten and libertarianism, the paleoconservative strategy I think was wrong. I think we need a cosmopolitan strategy because the world is becoming smaller and more minute as social medias come together.
You know that Murray Rothbard has been dead for like 20 years, right? And he had abandoned this whole paleoconservative shtick.
So,
before he died, you're talking about you're dragging up things that are literally 30 years old.
I'll change the subject. So the Constitution is 276 years old. Is it irrelevant? No.
I don't think the
No.
We will conservative adventures of Murray Rothbard and Ron Paul 25 years ago are.
I love Ron
relevant
Paul.
To
I love Ron Paul, but the paleo strategy was a mistake. And listen, when the press comes, when the media comes to you, Rachel, and they want to find the racist newsletters of Austin Peterson, what will they find?
Nothing. I know that. But let me address what I think Ron Paul's mistake was there, as I understand it.
Sure.
Okay. At the fundamental level of this is Ron Paul's belief in coalitions, not compromise. And he builds coalitions with people where he agrees, you know, and that's what he focuses on. He focuses on where he has agreement. And a lot of times, I guess the mistake is to disregard where you disagree. And I think he was so strong in building a coalition with a lot of friends that he trusted that he, and he sort of checked out, I think, a little bit of yeah. politics for a while. Yes, we all do. We all get burned out. No, listen.
You can't be president and do that. You must know your associations. You shall.
This was way before he wanted to be president. This is way before.
You know, just like Jack Hunter.
I know, but you cannot run for president for your entire life. You know, you make a decision. I mean, no one is perfect.
But I mean, listen, Obama, in many ways, you know, like he had some shady associations and all that kind of stuff. Generally, Americans want that strong character in that sense. And the reason why we lost Iowa both times is because right before the caucuses in Iowa, the newsletters controversy emerged. And both times, half of my team of freedom fighters deserted both times. And it was heartbreaking.
I know. You have to have a good answer. You have to have a good answer for this. And I think that's another shortcoming is he did not have a good answer. He tried to ignore it for far too long. You know, and in the Morton Blackwell School, the Leadership Institute, we learn, you know, to ignore things until they go away. And then when they don't go away, then you have to answer them. But he waited too long, you know, unfortunately, before answering the whole newsletters thing. And
somebody, I don't believe it so much. I think somebody sold out Ron. I don't know the true story.
Yeah.
Listen, you probably know it, but I mean, like,
Ben Swan outed who wrote it, and it was not anybody interesting.
I don't know if I believe that. I don't care. I don't owe anybody Jack. That's why I love being me, because I don't owe anybody Jack Squad. I don't have to cover for anybody's butt. I owe nobody nothing.
Well, this is what I know about Ron Paul, mm-hmm. is that there's not a racist bone in his body. There really is not.
I got that impression from him.
That
was palling around with David Duke.
Well, it wasn't Ron Paul. I mean, but they're seriously not a racist. There's not even a homophobic bone in his body.
Except for the weird shit that he said. Excuse me. The weird thing that he said on Bruno. Remember the?
I was there.
He comes from a different era. It's like my dad. You know what I mean? Like sometimes my dad.
No, but what he said was not homophobic at all. He was offended because he got put in a terrible situation, and it was very embarrassing. And you know, and he reacted the way any normal person would.
By the way, the movement's going to freak out about this conversation because
who?
The movement is going to freak out. Like the Liberty movement.
Nobody watches my show.
I think that when they put out this conversation, there's gonna be some articles.
Yeah, maybe.
And Ron's people hate me. Ron's people really despise me. The crazy, the psycho.
I can't imagine why.
The crazies that he hired. What's his name? Kevin McButt.
Friends like you. Who needs Jamie Kirchick?
Yeah, no. You don't need Jamie. You know, Jamie Kirchick was doing his job, but they got the crazy eyes, Rachel. They got the look in their eyes. They got the crazy eyes, you know, and they're like rooting for Vladimir Putin. These aren't libertarians. Who the hell are these people? You know, no, but they weren't in the movement. They weren't in the Tea Party. They weren't fighting for Ron. I never saw them at any event, movements and stuff like that. This Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Who are these charlatans, these frauds, and these mountebanks?
What?
You know what I'm talking about? The creepy crawlers at Target Liberty and all these like little negative third wing, you know, third rate blogs that are attacking me and all this stuff like that. You must know who these creeps are. They were never there fighting for Ron. I don't never saw them. Who are these weirdos? This Kevin guy or something like that. This is Ron Paul's legacy.
Well, we're all searching for what happens next, you know, We don't need a cult of personality. We don't need to worship Ron Paul forever. We all need to figure out what's next.
Thank you.
So that's what everybody's trying to do. That's why all of these websites and all of these organizations are springing up, because we're trying to figure out, you know, how to move on, how to stay cohesive, how to get something accomplished without, you know, Ron Paul as the, you know, figurehead, you know.
Right.
Ron Paul never wanted that. I mean, he always wanted to advance liberty, and that's all he wanted to do. And he thought if he could take on that role and it would be helpful, then he would do it. But, I mean, Ron Paul is Ron Paul. He's not perfect, yeah. but he's pretty darn close. I mean, I don't, you know, let Chris Christie, is he better?
No, no.
I mean, come on.
No, but like we've zonked ourselves out. We've become the Obama zombies in the sense because
I mean, you never had a friend that made you uncomfortable and used the N word or told off color jokes, or,
I mean, no, not a friend. Not a friend.
You live in the South. Come on.
No. No. I mean, like, you know, like attracts like. And, like, you know, you need to surround yourself with good people. You're a social. You shall know them by their fruits. By your associations, you shall be judged. You know, like, I surround. When I was a little boy, I was a choir boy. I was a very good boy. And I believed in the philosophy of the Bible without any of the supernatural hocus pocus. And I believe that Jesus was a good man who had a lot of good teachings, and so I followed them and I've applied them to my life now, even though I've renounced, like, you know, the religion in a sense. But no, I never surrounded from a little boy when I was a good boy and I surrounded myself with good friends because I believe that my parents, when they taught me that, you know, when who your friends are, they will influence you and stuff like that. Yeah, we were kind of bad kids every once in a while. Sometimes I get spanked. But for the most part, I sought out those associations, which I thought we would benefit from one another and positively affect one another. Maybe
well,
I've been lucky. Maybe
you're
that's
a young man, Austin.
Privilege.
You're well, a young man.
Maybe that's my white privilege.
So, did you watch the debate? How much did you watch, honestly?
Like 75% of it.
Really?
Yeah. And then I read the transcripts of the rest.
Yeah.
I've got no choice. I'm running for president, Rachel.
Okay, yeah.
I can't be caught slipping.
And did you watch the little kids debate, the kids table?
Yeah, a little bit of that stupid stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of what I'm reading is everybody thinks that their guy won. Like, it was just sort of confirming. If you liked so-and-so at the beginning, you liked him even more after, you know? And that's what I'm hearing about Rand is everyone on my Facebook page likes Rand, of course. So, you know, Rand did awesome. Ah, he did great. But, you know, you liked Rand before, you liked him even more after. And that's, you know, the people that like Cruz, they felt the same. The people like Trump, they felt the same. Can you take a step back and objectively?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, tell me objectively.
Man, that's what's awesome about being a third-party candidate is I can be honest. From a substantive perspective, I thought Rand Paul won the debate because he was making the most libertarian arguments, the ones that I agreed with the most.
Yeah.
In terms of like an audience performance, objectively, I would say they probably would say that Marco Rubio gave the best performance because he hews to that mainstream conservative Republican, neoconservative sort of party the establishment finds acceptable.
Right.
And Carson falls flat. Fiorina falls flat. Jeb Bush falls flat. You know, who else?
You think Carson's pretty much done? Are we done with him? Can we be done?
Well, you know what? He's going to get the job that he was going for the whole time, which is Surgeon General, you know, and wonderful man he will be should Marco Rubio take the presidency. And
okay.
Better Marco Rubio than Hillary Trump, or excuse me, Hillary Trump, Hillary Clinton, and better me than all three of them, or all two of them. Me out of all three. But
I think I'm hearing that Fiorina, like, that she is falling flat, like the people that liked her before are getting tired of her
like
and they're looking somewhere else.
Carly Fiorina and I heard the most hilarious joke today. Somebody showed a picture of Carly Fiorina and they're like, Carly Fiorina seeking ways to convert Dalmatian skins into furs.
Yeah, I posted that.
That was a terrible joke. But
so, I mean, talk about Trump for a minute. Talk about Trump. When are we going
to
get rid of him finally, or is he going
to
be the nominee? Is he going to be the nominee, or when is he going to finally fight it?
You got the crucial Putin endorsement, right?
Did you get a Putin endorsement?
Who are supporting Trump right now? Are the people who would be supporting Rand or Cruz. And they support Cruz more than they support Trump. So let's talk about what really is going on right now. Trump has destroyed Jeb Bush. He has destroyed Rand Paul. And he has destroyed...
China, says Charles Kennedy.
You're, You're completely out of your gourd. What Rand Paul guy is distracted by the shiny object that is Donald Trump?
Michael,
there, I contend there
Just because you're a genius, not everybody is like you, dude.
Michael,
think like the average voter. You've got to think like the average voter.
A lot. Do you remember Sarah, who used to be on the show a lot? She was behind Trump in Raleigh, North Carolina, and my friend.
She was
Kelly,
there as a paid political consultant.
I don't know.
It's
that
a
she
little
was,
different.
You think she was paid?
Yes, she said explicitly she was paid, and she was not endorsing Donald Trump.
She was paid to be there?
Yes.
She was paid to be there.
She was a paid political consultant who was there observing the event.
Oh, good Lord.
That's
a little bit different. She's a cute blonde. She's a very attractive blonde. And she went with my friend Kelly, who's also a very attractive blonde. They put them, my friends, right behind Trump on the stage here in Raleigh. So that it, yeah, I mean.
You asked me about Trump. Listen, Trump's going to go down. The establishment's going to take him out, okay? Which leaves potentially Cruz or Rubio. The establishment's going to unite behind Rubio. That's what's going to happen, okay? Because he's the acceptable candidate. Rubio and Jeb Bush basically have the same positions, but Jeb has got the bad like legacy of the Bush name. And if they have the same positions, why not pretend like you've got the outside candidate? Rubio was like the Tea Party candidate, right? It's all fake, but he's a total establishment, solid neocon. It doesn't matter. Rubio will be the acceptable establishment choice that will pretend to act like it. He will be the National Review candidate, and we'll have 4 to 8 more years of Bush, wars in the Middle East, and big government if we don't have Hillary Clinton. Who knows? You know, I mean, listen, you want to be honest here? That's what's probably going to happen. Donald Trump will bring some delegates to the Republican National Convention. There probably will be a fistfight, and the Republican Party will do to Trump what they did to Ron Paul.
Yeah, but I don't think Trump can take that. He does have an ego. Yeah, he can't go to the convention.
Boy. Ron was a weenie. I love Ron, but he didn't have a fighting bone in his body. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you wouldn't want to put Ron in a firefight. You don't want Ron in a firefight. You want Donald Trump. So be real here. Donald Trump's people will fight. They will fight. You know, listen, I don't care. You know, from a philosophical perspective, I'm a libertarian. From a tactical perspective, I am a social, you know, neoconservative, Marxist, communist, radical, fight whatever tactics you can use to win. Because all that matters is Niccolo Machiavelli. Rothbard had – don't put Rothbard up against Machiavelli, okay? If you want to win, fight like Donald Trump. If you want to have a good policy for your economy and for your government, vote Rand Paul. You know, I'll do what's right for our country, but if you're trying to ascribe your intelligent brain to the average voter, you're already on the wrong track. You're starting wrong. Most people don't.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, that's politics, and that's true.
We're the libertarian Bilderbergs.
What?
We're the libertarian Bilderbergs.
Yeah, we need that. Libertarian Bilderbergs.
Without the money.
Minus the money. That's pretty important. We need to figure that out.
True. Start a business. Stop running for president.
Yeah. So what else?
I don't know. I mean, if anybody listens to this tomorrow, and I know a lot of people are going to listen to this interview because I'm going to share it out there. So yeah.
Okay. Good.
It's going to generate a lot of heat. It is.
Clark Lind is asking if you're slurring yet. I think you are a little bit.
I haven't had a drink since we started, so I've only been getting more sober.
You're supposed to be drinking.
I know.
It makes the show better. Drink.
I will.
Okay. Every time Charles Kennedy makes a comment, everybody has to drink. That's the drinking game. He's going to comment.
Do we have
Charles Kennedy.
Rachel, I have anything.
What?
Ask me anything.
Ask you anything. My mind went blank. Isn't that the way it works? I'm such a great host.
We were talking about Trump. We were talking about the debates earlier. Let's talk about what happens.
Charles Kennedy made a comment. Drink.
All right. I'm getting a beer here in just 2 seconds. What happens when Rand goes down?
I think that
the objective.
Yeah. Here's my honest opinion on the Rand Paul campaign.
Pretty sure the sun will rise the next day.
Yes, the sun will rise the next day. A.
No, you can't. Rand Paul.
And
same thing will happen that always happens.
And B, people need to not get discouraged. People need to think about 2020.
Yeah.
Rand is very young. He's only been in the Senate a few years. Ron Paul had, nearly a 40-year political career.
Yeah.
Rand is just getting started. He's got a lot of years ahead of him. Don't give up on Rand. And in the meantime, there's the Libertarian Party. You don't have to sell out and vote for Marco Rubio or, God forbid, Donald Trump. You don't have to do that. You can vote for Austin Peterson. You can vote for Austin Peterson. And I even though, we might be up against Gary Johnson, I would vote for him. If that's who the Libertarian Party picks, I would vote for Gary Johnson above any Republican, except for Rand Paul. I wouldn't want to work against Rand Paul.
No.
If he was the nominee, but I don't think it's likely.
Oh no, but here's the thing, Rachel. Like since we have nothing to lose, why don't we just be honest? If let's say Rand Paul wins and we win, and then we're running against Rand, like this is the stuff that dreams are made of. Because
why is that good?
Well, because if Rand is smart, he would go to the Libertarian Party and say, let's make a deal, and then we could somehow find a way to like beat the Democrats together. Because honestly, like, what do you really want to do? What do you want to do? Like, do you have a master strategy? I mean, I'm supposed to hate Rand, okay? That's what I'm supposed to do as a partisan, perhaps. But since I'm an independent individualist and the Libertarian Party might not choose me anyway,
Hate Rand. I love Liberty.
Oh, yeah, I kind of like him. And yeah, I can. And like Mike Lee, too, even though I don't like some of the stuff he does. And sometimes I even like Ted Cruz. Anybody that shut down the government has got a pretty good, track record. But Obama really shut down the government, though, because he's the one who wouldn't.
So if Rand wins the nomination and you win the nomination, you want to talk.
Yeah, I want to talk.
Let's talk.
Yeah, you know why? Because maybe he's going to be like, he'll be scared of me. Maybe he'll be like, this guy's going to get me on those Syrian refugees. I better change my position. I better be more libertarian because I'm going to eat his lunch if he doesn't be a good libertarian. And maybe that's a good thing for America because America would benefit because Rand would be even more libertarian.
Yeah, there's that, and I hope that's the case, but there's also the argument that if he went too libertarian, he would alienate his base.
Well, he's already alienated his base, and guess what it's done for him?
4%, that's what it's done for him.
Okay, right. Listen, yeah. I wasn't raised a fool. I came out of the dirt, a farm. I raised, sold flowers as a little boy, dug them in the fields myself. Like, I didn't come, from Peculiar, Missouri to New York City to Washington, D.C. and conquer both, major professions because I was an idiot. There's ways to win for liberty. Now, immediately, in 2016, if the right people get together in the right rooms and do the right things and make the right decisions.
But I agree.
But if we alienate ourselves and we segregate ourselves and we do what Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and all the bad guys and the Bushes and stuff want us to do.
And that's just call each other fascist.
Yeah.
Statist.
Yeah, and if we don't do it,
bringing up paleoconservatism.
Bring it up. Oh, no.
Maybe it still needs to be discussed. I don't know.
Listen, do you want to talk? Do you have something to fear? Like, let's not talk about something? Like, no. Everything's on the table to discuss.
Yeah.
Got nothing to be afraid of. You want to talk about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan and all that? Let's talk about it.
They suck.
That's right.
I am more than happy to lose the Klan vote for Donald Trump. He can have those voters.
We did.
Even if it gets him elected. I am more than happy to let the non-libertarian, single-issue, crazy people.
The hateful people. I'm
going to get some people mad. Yeah. You saw the home birthers, right? All of these people that they are not small government.
Yeah.
They are anti the current government because they want a different powerful government that can focus on their pet craziness. Yeah. Okay.
I always say that anarchists don't want a government.
Because they have those people.
But the anarchists don't want a government.
Put them on the SS Trump and let them sail.
Yeah.
We do not need them. I do not want them.
I agree.
So anyways, the conspiracy theorists have been trying to ride me out of the movement for years because I debunked their BS. Their 9/11, 7/11 was a part-time job.
That's funny. I like that.
That is pretty
I'm
good.
I'm going to steal that.
Who's waving?
I'm not going to credit you because I don't believe in intellectual property.
Hello. This is Ashley, my sister.
Hi, Ashley.
And
you
so
join us. You have a voice. It's important.
We have lost the crazy vote, and you saw Alex Jones has gone to where he was always going to go. The Trump, this fascist.
Oh, Alex Jones hates you.
Oh yes, he does. He gave me the nickname the Peterson.
All of the right people hate you. That's what I like about you, Austin. All of the right people hate you.
The Nazis hate me. The conspiracy theorists hate me. The paleo conservatives hate me. The homophobes hate me. The racists hate me. Dang, must be doing something right, ladies and gentlemen. Must be doing something right.
This has been a production of Liberty.me. Join us and start your free trial today. The views expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of Liberty.me. If you enjoyed this podcast or have any ideas for future episodes, please take a minute to give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher.